In New York, it's Chuck Schumer versus General Aviation again. Airlines have managed a dramatic safety improvement over the last decade, and FAA aligns its definition of runway incursion with the rest of the world. This is Aero News. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for downloading this AeroCast. Here's what's up in aviation for Tuesday, October 2nd, 2007. U.S. Senator Chuck Schumer of New York is angering general aviation proponents again. The Democrat has been quick to pander to public fears about low-level flights around Manhattan post-9/11 and again post-Corey Lytle. Now he's on the warpath over helicopter noise around Long Island. At least this time, Schumer is trying diplomacy before threatening new laws. Quote, "We're bringing people together to find a solution," unquote. The rate of helicopter departures from East Hampton Airport and Gabreski Airport reached record levels this summer, according to airport documents. Not surprisingly, complaints from area residents, many of them newer to the community than the airports, rose accordingly. Schumer is calling for voluntary restrictions on helicopter flight paths. He wants departure and arrival routes pushed out over the Atlantic Ocean or out over Long Island Sound. He also wants helos to fly at a minimum of 3,000 feet above ground when operating away from airports. Some communities in the area appear ready to butt heads with the federal government over control of airspace. Lawmakers in Southold have proposed laws forcing helos to fly above 3,000 feet, and Supervisor Scott Russell said the town police department is prepared to enforce those rules if enacted. 10 years ago, a White House commission called for a commitment by government and industry to reduce fatal airline accidents by 80% over the coming decade. That 10 years is up now, and while the accident rate didn't drop 80%, the New York Times notes it has dropped 65% to one fatal accident for every 4.5 million departures. Former FAA Administrator Marion Blakey noted in a speech September 11th to the Washington Aero Club, quote, "This is the golden age of safety, the safest period in the safest mode in the history of the world," unquote. A key reason for the improvement lies in efforts by American carriers, as well as many foreign ones, to track and eliminate little problems before they become larger ones that could lead to fatal crashes. Richard Healing, an aviation safety expert and former member of the National Transportation Safety Board, observes that the biggest risks are no longer those in the air. Quote, "Probably the biggest threat of all today, many, many people agree, is not so much a mid-air collision as a runway incursion incident," unquote. The FAA announced on Monday that effective immediately, the agency will switch to the definition for a runway incursion adopted by the International Civil Aviation Organization. The FAA tells ANN that the uniform definition could help in the search to determine common factors that contribute to these incidents. The biggest difference between the two definitions is ICAO defines a runway incursion as any unauthorized intrusion onto a runway, regardless of whether or not an aircraft presents a potential conflict. For the FAA, an incident without an aircraft in potential conflict, such as an unauthorized aircraft crossing an empty runway, was previously defined as a surface incident and not as a runway incursion. The classification of the most serious kinds of runway incursions remains unchanged. The total number of Category A and B incursions has fallen from 53 in fiscal year 2001 to 31 in 2006. A and B incursions are on track for another drop in 2007, with 24 recorded through September 9th. Before the ICAO's uniform definition was developed, countries around the world used at least 20 different definitions for runway incursion. A National Transportation Safety Board investigator says four people died in the crash of a float plane near Katmai National Park and Preserve in Alaska. The board reports the Helio Courier H-295 was on its way back to Royal Wolf Lodge near Nunvianuk Lake on Sunday. The pilot had told the staff at the lodge he expected to be back by 4 p.m. National Park Service spokesman John Quinley told the Associated Press that when the plane didn't arrive, aircraft from the lodge were sent out and found the wreckage. Hikers reached the site and confirmed there were no survivors. No victims have been identified by name yet, but they were reported to be the plane's pilot, a fishing guide, and two clients. Up next on ANN, the commemorative Air Force is looking for a new president. The FAA reconsiders its permission to rebuild a radio tower in Fullerton, and NIMBYs in the New York suburbs line up to challenge the FAA. You're listening to Aero News.
Do you think the only time your certified airplane can be equipped with a full emergency airframe parachute recovery system is when it rolls off the production line? Well, think again. BRS is the aftermarket leader in providing full airframe recovery parachutes for certified airplanes like yours. We manufacture the reliable parachute systems you need for a full range of aircraft, including Cessna. For your own safety and for that of your family members and loved ones, get the extra life assurance of a BRS airframe recovery parachute. In the event of an emergency, you'll never question the security of having one final option. Call BRS at 651-457-8651 or visit us online at brsparachutes.com.
We're back with more of your Aero Briefing for October 2nd, 2007. On the web, you can find us at www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Aero News has learned that Bob Rice, president of the Commemorative Air Force, resigned in August to become executive director for the American Red Cross of Southwest Texas. Rice, who remained in his capacity as CAF president through this past weekend's air show, starts his new position on Monday. Gordon Stevenson, chairman of the CAF's board of directors, tells us a nationwide search is underway to find Rice's replacement. In 1991, Rice joined the CAF when it moved its headquarters to the Midland-Odessa area. After serving as vice president of flight operations for 7 months, he assumed the position of president in January 1992. Rice is active in several local organizations and serves on the board of the International Council of Air Shows. In his 15 years as president, Rice has seen the CAF thrive. Quote, "Now I look forward with excitement and enthusiasm to beginning my partnership with the people of the American Red Cross. As we all know, the Red Cross is a humanitarian organization that has a proud heritage of service. It plays a vital role not only in our community, but in every community throughout this nation." Unquote. The FAA has agreed to review its approval of the proposed reconstruction of a KFI radio antenna tower near Fullerton Municipal Airport in California. The agency had previously determined that the 684-foot tower will not pose a hazard to air navigation. The city of Fullerton appealed that ruling, prompting the FAA review, which could take up to 6 months. The previous antenna tower was 760 feet tall and was built there 59 years ago. It was toppled when a plane struck it in December of 2004. The pilot and his passenger both died. KFI's shorter temporary tower has dramatically reduced its signal coverage from what the Federal Communications Commission has authorized. Station officials point out that the reduced coverage also impacts the state's emergency communications plan. A NIMBY battle against the FAA's revised airspace plan for Metro New York and Philadelphia is gathering steam. Stamford, Connecticut appears ready to join 8 other municipalities in a lawsuit against the FAA. Michael Frymuth, Stamford's Director of Economic Development, told The Advocate he submitted a request to the Board of Finance for $30,000 to cover Stamford's share of the costs of the suit. At a meeting held last week in New Canaan, 9 municipalities agreed to split the legal fees, but most had to go back to their boards for final approval. Opponents of the airspace reorganization plan must file their lawsuits by early November. The FAA's airspace redesign is scheduled to be phased in over the next 2 years. At last week's NBAA convention in Atlanta, there were plenty of opinions on the reasons for the boom in business jets. One that popped up in almost every conversation was the continued decay of the airline travel experience. If you're close to making a private jet pencil out, a few horrible days traveling through airline hubs can really help convince you to take the step. Lost, damaged, or just plain stolen luggage is a growing part of that declining airline experience. The U.S. Bureau of Transportation Statistics reported that June and July ranked among the worst months in 20 years of record keeping for airline baggage complaints. The Washington Post reports that over the last 5 years alone, reports of mishandled bags have more than doubled from 3.84 to 7.93 reports per 1,000 bags handled. Airlines blame a jump in the number of checked bags after the TSA imposed restrictions on what could be in carry-ons, and staffing levels are down due to layoffs during airline bankruptcies. Whatever the causes, frequent flyers seem more and more aware of the growing problem. Joshua Marcusi, a 25-year-old management consultant and frequent traveler, told the Post, quote, "It's just a disaster. They never lose my bags in other countries. Seriously, I could be in the jungle in Latin America, on safari in Africa, in India or Nepal. The airlines in Nepal didn't lose my bag," unquote. Still ahead, the world prepares for the 50th anniversary of Sputnik. Pieces of the Concorde go for big bucks at a charity auction. And a Georgia state senator agrees to skydive for charity. You're listening to Aero News.
At Cirrus Design, we don't ignore the fundamentals of aviation design. We give them an ingenious new interpretation. The Cirrus SR20 GTS. Go ahead, indulge yourself. The SR20 GTS provides entry-level luxury into the world of Cirrus, yet at a price that makes indulgence affordable. When friends, family, and business associates experience the versatility, freedom, and sheer fun of flying in your Cirrus, they'll see that it maximizes the most precious commodity of all, time. To learn more, call 888-750-9922. Or check us out on the web at cirrusdesign.com.
Finally, aviation headsets have evolved. Clarity Aloft is the next generation of headset design. One reason that they can say that is because of Clarity Aloft's flexible boom arm. This featherweight band is the same one sported by stage musicians and performers the world over. Balance and comfort are the result of its elegantly simple design. The mic boom is easily repositioned for eating and drinking during flight without disturbing your earpieces. For more information, call 612-747-3197 or check out the innovative Clarity Aloft headset on the web at clarityaloft.com.
We're back to wrap up your Aero Briefing for Tuesday, October 2nd, 2007. I'm Paul Plagg. Thursday will mark the 50th anniversary of Sputnik 1, which became the starting gun for the space race, which would consume the U.S. and Soviet Union during the 1960s. On the eve of the anniversary, the Associated Press has been conducting interviews with some of the pioneering Soviet space scientists whose identities in some cases were kept secret for decades by their government. 95-year-old Boris Chertok, one of the scientists behind Sputnik, related that the powerful rocket eventually used to lift Sputnik into space was originally the R-7 ballistic missile, designed to be capable of propelling a hydrogen nuclear warhead to the U.S. mainland. When development of the warhead hit a snag, Chertok says, Soviet chief scientist Sergei Korolev convinced the Kremlin to allow an attempt at an orbital launch. Resisting calls from other scientists to equip the first Sputnik with instruments, Korolev and his team built a small aluminum sphere equipped only with radio beacon transmitters and antennas, polished to reflect the heat and weighing just 184 pounds. Sputnik 1 was built in just 3 months, and the launch came off 2 days ahead of schedule to beat what the Soviets feared would be an American launch 1 day before theirs. Chertok told AP that it would be days before the team members realized the significance of Sputnik. He also revealed some details we might not have known. Apparently, the bright object we all watched cross the sky in 1957 was not actually Sputnik, but its spent second-stage booster, which wound up in an orbit close to Sputnik's. The satellite itself was too small to be seen with the naked eye. While Sputnik 1 achieved a first for mankind, it was given primarily a political and PR mission. And it was effective, spurring the U.S. to take space seriously after our own satellite program, with the suddenly obsolete name Vanguard, was relegated to second place in the brand new space race. Toulouse, France is home to Airbus, which is in turn the descendant of the French side of a consortium which built the Concorde supersonic jetliner. The planes were retired in 2003, and now salvaged pieces will help fund a park in Toulouse. The AP reports an auction, conducted in person, online, and by phone, raised €800,000 from bidders seeking their own pieces of aviation history. The auction, which ended on Monday, was organized by Aerotech, which got the lot of parts for a symbolic price of €1. Proceeds will fund construction of a park and a museum. The auction brought in more than 3 times the expected windfall, as bidders paid prices usually associated only with Pentagon procurement. Two supersonic airspeed indicators brought $29,000 and $26,000 respectively. A section of the landing gear sold for $37,000. And, in true Pentagon style, the toilet seats went as high as $7,400. Georgia State Senator Preston Smith is going to jump out of a perfectly good airplane, and for a good cause. Smith will be joining supporters of the Sexual Assault Center of Northwest Georgia on Saturday, October 13th, for a fundraiser called Jumpin' for Justice. He told the Rome News Tribune, quote, "When I found out about the chance to skydive to help raise money for SAC, I jumped at the chance, pardon the pun." The jumps will be made in tandem with volunteers tethered to an experienced instructor. One of those instructors, Steve Hassaman, describes a tandem jump as safer than driving on I-285 in Atlanta. A similar idea in New York involving U.S. Senator Chuck Schumer had to be canceled when dozens of helicopter tour operators and flight school owners began fighting over who'd get to pack his chute. Okay, I made that last part up. And finally, if skydiving isn't an extreme enough sport for you, how about space diving? ABC News reports that Space Diver is differentiating itself from other space tourism companies by proposing a novel re-entry method after a suborbital pleasure flight. Jump out for the trip home. Rick Tumlinson, an entrepreneur who served as a founding trustee of the Ansari X Prize, wants to develop a special spacesuit for space divers and eventually for use as a sort of high-altitude life vest for space travelers. Tumlinson's Orbital Outfitters Incorporated designs spacesuits for the crews and passengers of commercial spaceships. And lest you think he's not serious, his team includes Jonathan Clark, the former NASA flight surgeon who is now at Baylor Medical College's National Space Biomedical Research Institute. His wife was astronaut Laurel Clark, who died in the Columbia tragedy. And that's the latest from Aero News. Remember to check out the ANN special feature. Today, we'll hear AOPA President Phil Boyer update an audience at NBAA on the now extended congressional battle over FAA funding and user fees. And if you haven't done so already, subscribe to our AeroCasts. Find them on iTunes, Yahoo, Odeo, and at our website, www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.